KALW.
The gay community in San Francisco didn't really know very much about their rights. And so we had lawyers come and tell us that we weren't illegal just because we were gay.
One of the most influential gay rights activists, Phyllis Lyon, came from San Francisco.
She enjoyed being a little gay-mas, famous gay person, gay-mas.
In her final years, her friends and family wanted to hire caregivers to look after her, but they had to lie.
They were going to get a caregiver in her house by hiring some young lesbian that comes in and says that they're interested in lesbian history.
It was the only way to get her the care she needed.
Isn't that weird? But it's true. By disrespecting her and lying, we're respecting her.
Caring for a queer icon. I'm Suni Khalid in for Hana Baba, and this is Cross Currents. It's no surprise that San Francisco holds the title of having the most same-sex couples in the U.S. But do you know who were the first to get married? Phyllis Lyon and her partner, Del Martin. They were both well-known activists. For this Pride Month, we're revisiting a story from reporter Evan Roberts about Phyllis's final days and the community that came together to take care of this legendary queer elder.
I'm just going to take Castro all the way up to her house. That way I don't have to get lost in any of the hills. It's definitely happened before.
Dottie Lux is gripping the steering wheel with long stiletto nails the color of black licorice. She's a nightlife performer in burlesque and drag shows around the city, but it's arguably her day job she's headed to that's more interesting. She's a caregiver for Phyllis Lyon.
She's like well into her 90s and still cannot conceive of needing help for washing her dishes, to washing her butt, to washing her car, right? And to convince her that she does need help is not possible.
At the foot of the stairs to Phyllis's house, Dottie pointed a nail to the initials PL and DM carved in the sidewalk. She convinced a construction worker months ago to let her draw Phyllis and her partner Dell's initials into the wet cement.
And I was like, the person who's lived in this house has lived here forever. This is her spot. Can I please put her initials in? She's very special, and she's famous. I was like, and she's famous.
Phyllis Lyon was born in Tulsa, Oklahoma in 1924. Her family moved to Sacramento when she was in high school. She studied journalism at Berkeley and covered the police beat in Fresno. And when she moved to Seattle to write for a trade journal, one of her coworkers was a woman named Del Martin. Del was a lesbian and wasn't shy about it. Phyllis was fascinated, and for a year they were just good friends. Until one day, the story goes, Del made half a pass and Phyllis completed it.
You know, when I look back on it, I know, you know, that I was gay all the time, but I didn't know that.
In 1953, Phyllis and Del bought a small house in the Noe Valley. It had a huge window with a view of the San Francisco skyline, but they knew very few lesbians.
We were so happy when somebody suggested we should get involved with starting this new group.
Daughters of Bilitis, or DOB, started as a social club, a place where women could dance and meet each other while feeling safe. But it quickly shifted into a political organization.
A lot of women came to DOB who had been either abandoned by their families or had electroshock therapy or had been thrown into mental institutions or who had escaped from mental institutions.
DOB was the first national lesbian organization. They distributed their newsletter, The Ladder, across the country, and Phyllis was the editor.
The only way a lot of people ever knew what was happening about homosexuality was through what we wrote about in The Ladder, because the newspapers didn't print this kind of stuff.
Homosexuality was criminalized in the 50s. People kept their gayness a secret. If they were found out, it could cost them.
People were losing jobs and people were losing friends and family.
Phyllis helped found a group bringing together religious leaders with queer activists to advocate for gays and lesbians. 4 years before Stonewall, they held a fundraiser costume ball. Drag queens and clergymen showed up. So did the cops.
When the police started saying, we want to come in, and they just finally said, you can't come in unless you've got an invitation or a search warrant.
After that, Phyllis and Dell helped to create a hotline to report police intimidation, harassment, and violence.
And we also started what we called the community discussion group.
Community discussion meetings.
The gay community in San Francisco didn't really know very much about their rights. And so we had lawyers come and tell us that, yeah, we weren't illegal just because we were gay.
In 1972, Phyllis and Dell wrote the pathbreaking book Lesbian Woman, which described and affirmed the lesbian experience.
There had been loads and loads of books about male homosexuals, and there hadn't been anything on lesbians that was worth talking about.
Even as they got older, they stayed active. Congresswoman Nancy Pelosi appointed Phyllis and Dell to the White House Conference on Aging in 1995.
They were mentors to so many of us in San Francisco for decades about civic engagement.
Phyllis and Dell didn't care much about marriage, but they also didn't want to be second-class citizens. When California legalized gay marriage, Phyllis and Dell were the first to be married and became the face of gay marriage in San Francisco.
Among those getting married, 84-year-old Phyllis Lyon and her partner of 55 years, 87-year-old Dell Martin. San Francisco Mayor Gavin Newsom will be officiating.
Two extraordinary people that have lived extraordinary lives, that have spent the greater part of a half century fighting for justice.
2 months after they legally married and 55 years since they got together, Dell Martin passed away. And that's when things began to change. There are many friends and family who are part of the story that comes next. One of them is 71-year-old Pan Haskins.
Phyllis hadn't been alone. They'd been together constantly for 55 or 60 years, and we were all very concerned for Phyllis.
Pan had been their bookkeeper for decades. After Dell's passing, she was part of an organized network of friends who supported Phyllis. Phyllis began struggling with everyday tasks. But Pan says Phyllis learned how to manage well enough that some of her friends didn't realize she was showing signs of dementia.
Dementia can be a very slow progression, and I think it was with Phyllis, and she would not admit that she needed help.
But by 2013, she did need help. Strangers would call when she was home alone, and Phyllis would try and write them checks. Phyllis let the insurance on the house lapse. Phyllis left the stove on and nearly started a fire. And when her daughter, Kendra Mon, tried to talk to her about these things, they would argue.
There's no sense in arguing with somebody who has memory loss because they don't remember. It kind of quickly became clear that we just needed to take care of things without her knowledge. So I got good at lying.
Kendra and Pan met with experts on dementia at UCSF, who gave them guidance on how best to care for people with memory loss. This put Pan at ease.
And one of the things they emphasized was little lies are okay. If you can tell small lies that will help them accept their situation and accept help and care, that's okay.
Pan, Kendra, and friends hatched a plan that would trick the fiercely independent Phyllis into receiving the care she needed.
They were going to get a caregiver in her house by hiring some young lesbian that comes in and says that they're interested in lesbian history.
This is Carrie Schell, hired on as Phyllis's first companion.
The premise was a really believable premise because a lot of young lesbians are really impressed by Phyllis Lyon and want to hang out with her.
Carrie was a perfect fit for the job, tattooed, queer, and with a social work background. At first, Carrie would come by just a few hours a day. She pretended she was helping Phyllis archive her newspaper clippings.
It wasn't very long before she kind of forgot where I came from and how long I'd been around. So in that way, her memory loss kind of worked in the favor of her getting care.
Her daughter, Kendra, knew that in order to keep Phyllis happy and stress-free, she had to keep her in the dark and let her think she was living independently.
If I were to tell her the truth about her situation, that these are not friends, that they're caregivers, that they're being paid, she would feel diminished by that. And to argue with her perspective is also disrespecting her. Isn't that weird? But it's true. by disrespecting her and lying, we're respecting her. We're keeping her image of herself the way she wants it to be.
Phyllis really was in charge of who she wanted to spend time with. Carrie would come by the house and hang out if Phyllis was in the mood. But one day when she was alone, Phyllis fell and hurt herself. Kendra and Pan decided she needed 24-hour care. They had to make some new decisions. Would they be able to find and train other people like Carrie? They tried the most obvious thing first, hiring caregivers from an agency.
You know, it would be some really lovely middle-aged lady that would show up at the door in scrubs with a pillow to stay the night. The minute somebody would say, "I'm a caregiver," she would say, "Get the hell out of my house. I don't need help and I don't need care. And whoever sent you, you can tell them to get the hell out too."
Now the goal was to find the kind of people who could get in the door and pass the Phyllis test. And part of passing that test meant being queer.
Because from the very beginning, the whole story has been that we're all friends hanging out with her. The lie has been easy because it's not always a total lie. We are queer people who want to hang out with her. That's not untrue.
Carrie says that hiring queer and trans people was a crucial part of caring for Phyllis because queer people share cultural references. They kind of speak the same language. Like this one time, Carrie showed up at Phyllis's after getting out of work and referred to her own outfit as her office drag.
You know, she doesn't know what day it is. She doesn't know what happened 5 minutes ago, but she still knows what office drag is.
Carrie found other queer and trans caregivers through friends and referrals. People that revered Phyllis like a queer grandma. People that loved listening to her stories about the daughters of Bilitis. And people who didn't mind when she was a little flirty. Like Dottie, the one with the black licorice nails.
She has smacked me on my ass. She has been flirty with me. And I adore it. I love it. And I have to say, like, when I'm trying to get her to do something, I flirt back, you know? And I mean it. You know, I'm like, "I'm gonna kiss your sweet cheek right now," you know, something like that.
Phyllis was known to be playful with caregivers, especially if you were femme-presenting like Dottie. Caregivers have said Phyllis was more attentive on the days they dressed up and looked cute for their shift.
She's kind of a flirt. I was like, "Oh, whoa, she's sassy."
Celeste Chan is a queer writer with a broad smile and cat-eyed glasses.
We'd be driving in the car, I'd make a comment about how hot it was, and she'd be like, "You're a hot kid." And I know, it's totally, I'm like, "Oh my, Phyllis, you're 94, going on 95. And she likes to have fun. I guess I would say she's someone who likes to have fun.
Dottie, Celeste, and Carrie have all posted selfies with Phyllis somewhere in San Francisco. In the park, in the car, or by the beach. And right next to them, Phyllis is beaming.
I like to pick restaurants that have beautiful views and sit by the window. I've taken Phyllis to drag brunch.
I mean, one of the things I love doing is bringing her out into the community. And she loves being recognized. She loves when people see her on the street and they're like, "Oh, I know who you are. Thank you for all that you've done." And she loves that.
Carrie says that Phyllis always enjoyed being in the limelight and can turn on the famous lesbian vibe in a moment.
She enjoyed being a little gamus, you know, famous gay person. Gamus. I called her Gamus once and she was like, "What the hell does that mean?" And I was like, "Gamus, think about it." And she was like, "Oh God." Do we need anything else? Should we get bowls for the chips?
In the winter of 2019, Kendra, Carrie, and around 10 caregivers gather to talk and share their experiences caring for Phyllis. It also happens to be Phyllis's 95th birthday. Kendra explains what's going on.
This is a kind of a quarterly caregiver gathering of Phyllis, the Phyllis team of caregivers. And we are in her home while two of her really good friends are taking her out to lunch.
She let me trim her nails the other night.
Amazing.
She had one that was loose.
We're sitting in the living room, which has an amazing view of the city skyline from a floor-to-ceiling picture window. The living room feels like a sacred lesbian space. It's where the Daughters of Bilitis had meetings and parties. There used to be curtains up so that people from the street couldn't see that women were dancing with women. But today, the curtains are gone. Taking them down was symbolic that Phyllis didn't need to hide anymore.
on the agenda for the rest of the meeting is end-of-life issues. So we already have detailed plans that the caregivers know about.
Did everybody sign the card?
Every caregiver is prepared for the inevitable, that one day soon, Phyllis may pass during their shift. Unless Phyllis is in physical pain, they are instructed not to call 911. It is to Phyllis's benefit to ease out of life, they are reminded, rather than to have it prolonged at any cost just to live longer. This house where they are meeting today isn't just a meeting place for the caregivers. It's actually the reason why Phyllis can get this kind of care in the first place. 5 years ago, Kendra, Pan, and close friends cobbled together a unique financial setup to pay for Phyllis's 24-hour care, and it all hinges on the value of Phyllis's home. Basically, wealthy friends, mostly older lesbians, donated funds that pay the caregivers. And Kendra explains, when Phyllis passes and after the house is sold, that money will go back to the original investors.
Phyllis is so lucky and doesn't have any clue. She has no clue. The house they bought in the 50s was $11,000. It's 850 square feet or something like that. But it's on a double lot, on a hill, with a view. And so it's worth millions, and we're able to borrow against that. And we hope that it will last.
It's a gift that Phyllis can live in her own home, Kendra says, where things are familiar, with friends who ask her about stories from her past and remind her of all the great things she's accomplished and all the lives she's impacted, like Pan's.
In a just and equitable world, we could hold and care for every elder the way we hold and care for Phyllis.
This is Carrie again.
You have to be wealthy or an icon to have this level of care that everybody should really have. I would love to see a queer community that takes care of elders in the same way that people take care of her.
In March of 2020, less than a week before San Francisco's shelter-in-place orders, Dottie heads to her 24-hour shift with Phyllis.
I'm close by. Let me know what would be best, period.
She's texting with another caregiver to coordinate. 6 months ago, caregivers might not have crossed paths on a shift change. They'd give Phyllis some privacy or time to read the morning paper. But Phyllis has been unstable on her feet, and she can't be left alone.
I've arrived, period. Should we meet on the stairs or I can come in, period.
Dottie walks across the sidewalk where she etched Phyllis and Dell's initials and heads up the stairs.
There's Deb.
Coming down the pathway from the house is caregiver Deb Svoboda, a filmmaker in her 40s. Deb is coming off a challenging two-day shift with Phyllis.
Is she in bed right now?
Yeah, I got her back in bed. And she gave I gave her a hydrocodone.
Okay, so she'll relax.
So hopefully when she wakes up for you, her legs won't be so bad.
I'll let you know. I'm going to have some good news for you, Deb.
Okay.
I'm getting to it.
Thank you.
All right, have a good day, okay?
You too, darling.
All right, bye, love.
They hug goodbye, and Deb walks down the path as Dottie walks up and into the house.
I just learned a few hours ago that one of my heroes, Phyllis Lyon, passed away. Phyllis, as you may know...
Phyllis Lyon passed away a month later on April 9th. The thoughtfulness that went into her caregiving also went into planning for her death. But as Kendra says, COVID-19 got in the way.
We thought we had planned for every eventuality. But with the crisis, those plans just went out the window. We did have an online home funeral 2 days after her death. I already miss having the community that cared for Phyllis, having them more in my life.
After Phyllis passed, I visited her neighborhood and walked by the steps that led up to her home. At some point in the future, this tiny bungalow will most likely be bulldozed, and a more modern structure will replace it. But today at the foot of the steps, there were two vigil candles and flowers tied with a rainbow ribbon. While sheltering in place, her friends and caregivers were thinking of Phyllis.
I miss the dry humor that Phyllis had. It was like sandpaper sometimes.
Everything that Phyllis did in her life was revolutionary and without fear. And I think that fearlessness is her biggest legacy.
I do really miss spending time with her. I think that it's a really beautiful thing to have this type of community care, like that care doesn't have to look so clinical. It can instead look like friendship. It can be a true exchange between people.
We can do this without institutions, and we can do this with just each other. I want it for everybody.
These were our grandmothers of the lesbian movement, and it will be great to say we showed up and were able to do the work we did and provide her that dignity at the end of her life.
All of their lives, Phyllis and Del were trying to create community. Their daughter Kendra says in their later years, they expressed disappointment and hurt that younger lesbians thought their thinking was outdated, that they were no longer relevant.
That they were fuddy-duddies, that's the word Del used. So having these young people join together to provide the care that Phyllis needed, that was the continuing community that they didn't get to see. Phyllis did indirectly, but I don't think she realized that she helped to create that community. And now, since Phyllis's death, they are still devoted to her memory, these young people. They have decided to call themselves the granddaughters of Belitis. They would have gotten such a kick out of that.
I was going to start out once upon a time. Once upon a time in 1955, there were eight women in San Francisco that gathered together to form an organization that was to become an international lesbian organization. Of the eight women, there were then four couples, four femmes, and four butches. Very politically correct. Some of you may have a little difficulty understanding what it was like in 1955, but it was very strange. It was very different than it is now. Lesbian, homosexual, sex, none of those things were ever mentioned in the media, on the radio, anywhere. Everybody knew that queers were no good, but that was about it. The bars were being raided, and we were asking women to come and join and put their names on mailing lists, and a lot of them did. Although we gathered together originally with the concept of being a social club, we also decided as we met more often that there were other things that an organization of lesbians ought to be doing. An organization which we hoped would help the lesbian to understand herself and to believe in her own worth, to have a good self-image, and to never pay any attention to what was going on with what society was saying about us. And an organization dedicated to changing the law.
That story was produced by Evan Roberts in 2020. Special thanks to Deb Svoboda for providing additional audio clips of Phyllis Lyon and Del Martin, courtesy of Making Gay History. Also thanks to Out in the Bay and Eric Jansen. And thanks to the Lesbian Her Story Archives, the GLBT Historical Society, Pacifica Radio Archives, and Peter L. Stein for clips from his documentary, The Castro. The Cross Currents team includes Aru Nair, Julia Haney, Nagar Ajayabi, James Rollins, Gonady Joe Johnson, Victor Tentz, Shireen Adel, Lisa Morehouse, Angela Johnston, Marissa Ortega Welch, Hussein Khan, and Ben Trefney. Our opening theme music is by the John Santos Quintet, as interpreted by Daoud Anthony. For Cross Currents, I'm Suni Khalid.